Latvia Weekly Interviews with Joe Horgan and Otto Tabuns.
Latvian VCM, and welcome to a very, very special episode of the Latvia Weekly podcast. I'm Joe Horgan, and for those of you who've been listening to the last few episodes and have been following the news in general, I know that all of you are very interested and concerned about the situation which is happening in Ukraine. And Otto and I, my co-host, we have been covering the Latvian side of everything that's been happening, and also what Latvia's reaction has been, the people of Latvia, the government of Latvia. But we haven't covered much about what's actually happening on the ground, because there's people who are doing that 24/7. One of those people who you have heard before on the show is Mr. Kristaps Andresons. He is the host of the Eastern Border podcast, and he's also somebody who's in quite a bit of demand right now in the Latvian media and also the international media, because you know, he has been talking about this situation for years already, unfortunately predicting that a situation like this could happen. And now that we are here, he has returned to Ukraine, as he has done. He's previously done a series of episodes in Ukraine, and not just in Ukraine, in the Donbass, on the conflict, the protracted conflict that's been happening there. But right now he is in Ukraine reporting on the scene what is happening right now. So, Kristaps, greetings to you. How are you right now?
Well, I'm doing fine. A little kind of just to set things clear, I am currently on the Polish side of the border. I'm going inside Ukraine with the cars that are going there to help people, but I'm talking to the refugees. I'm not, as of this recording, inside Ukraine. I will be, there, however, later this evening, because of all the transportation, because, you know, I probably wouldn't be doing these interviews from straight up there. So, yeah, but I'm in contact with all the refugees and people here. I'm right next to the border, about just a few kilometers away, because my hotel is in the closest town, and then I just spend all of my time during the day in the border control post, and then I skip in and out, and stuff happens. But it's been tough. I've turned all of my show into basically a daily news report on what's happening, and we're just launching some more edited episodes as they're happening. But well, everyone here is hopeful, and they try to see some sort of brighter future ahead for them. But the worst part is that you can see that these people, both those who are refugees and both those who are helping them, they're extremely tired. They're trying to keep optimism going, but they're extremely tired. And on the Ukrainian side, there's like a long line of cars. A lot of people have to stop right now about 30 kilometers away from the Polish border and walk on foot because they can't drive their vehicles. And as weird as it may sound, one of the most important things that Latvians, because I met some Latvians here who are helping, is the group that sends cars to Ukraine, because the territorial defense, kind of like our Zemeserds, they lack cars because they are prohibited from taking the cars of the people who try to escape because of all the evacuation. So they can't take Ukrainian cars. They can't just commandeer them. So they need some cars and stuff. But yeah, it's crazy because of all the stories how people just drive as close to as close as they can to the border, and then they walk on foot. And a lot of times I've seen people who are just women and children here, and elderly people, because a lot of people just take their families over here across this border, and we help them with that. And then the men just go back and fight. And I never thought I would say this, but yeah, wow, this is a massive drain on everyone's nerves and mental health, definitely. And everyone's just constantly worried. But one thing that is nice is how everything is organized, because I know that on the Ukrainian side, they take people from the border villages with buses to bigger central towns, and then they just don't go all to one border post. They have a plan. They spread out the people. So if you're from Lviv or something, then you get spread out to various border posts so that it doesn't pile up so much. But even here on this border post near Helm, even here, the line is 30 kilometers long on the Ukrainian side. It's insane. It's super hard. And they have two separate lines, that one's for the Red Cross cars that come in for the wounded, because there are a lot of wounded people. And yeah, and that's a big thing, and a major issue that the Polish cops are dealing right now on the border is another tragedy of this whole war, because in the last few days, literally on the last 2 days, some filthy sex traffickers have arrived who enter Ukraine, and then they pick up women, and then they promise them that they'll be taken to safety, and yeah, then they force them into prostitution. So now everyone's just no. The Polish cops, at least here, that's the big issue, that they're extremely harsh towards these human traffickers. I don't think that, because there were flyers given out to the people here. And today, one of the biggest organizers around here in these parts is, by the way, the Baptist Church. I know that that you care about that, but the Baptist Church here in Helm is one of the biggest organizers of everything. But this whole place has just turned into a massive refugee camp. Of course, the situation is worse in Ukraine, but wow, I honestly hope that we see an end to this situation somehow, because you know this is going to have some very lasting consequences, both economically and for the people involved everywhere.
No, certainly.
Just that it's just overwhelming for me here, as you can possibly imagine.
Yeah. No, I can't imagine. I mean, you know, it's one thing. I mean, you know, I've been following updates on it constantly. I mean, I have you know, Al Jazeera in the background running right now, and you know, just Twitter constantly going. And you know, it's one thing to hear about it from the comfort of Jelgava. You know, it's another thing to literally be on the eastern border as you are right now. You know, really, literally as close as you can be without being in Ukraine. So
well, I will be in Ukraine. I have been in there. It's just that I don't spend nights there because of safety reasons. Well, hey, now you have an answer to people who take your media class about what can you do as a podcaster. That's a good aspect in this whole situation. But yeah, it's difficult for all of us, and we have to do our best, do what we can. Also, I have to mention that quite a lot of people from, because I met those Latvian folks, and they're working, and quite a lot of them are from Jelgava. Yeah, so I'll be sure to give them your contacts, Joe, as well, because once they get to Jelgava, you might want to have them on your show as well, and ask them, definitely.
Yeah, no, certainly. I mean, you know, I think everyone's very interested in knowing everything that's going on, all the different aspects of this, not just the headlines that we see of, you know, attacks on nuclear power plants or residential blocks being burned, but, you know, what's it like for the people who are helping, the people who are fleeing, the people who, you know, who this is the reality for, not just the news?
It's the hardest part is the fact that also a lot of these refugees and a lot of people in Ukraine who are trying to organize things, well, a lot of them had put their faith in Russian banks like Sberbank and VTB. So a lot of them can't take out any money as well. That's a big issue. Even people who had some savings and everything, because, you know, for a long time, Russian banks were more stable. They were bigger than Ukrainian banks. And a lot of people kind of bought into the situation. And now they're, well, in a really tough spot. The same, by the way, is true for all the retired people, the pensioners in Latvia, who are receiving banks, who are receiving their money from Russia, and I hope that our social services can deal with this.
That is a number of people, That is a significant number of people. Kristaps, I was wondering, you know, I don't know how much interaction you've had with, you know, everyday people who are leaving, you know, who are leaving Ukraine and going to, you know, other countries, be it, you know, Poland or, you know, potentially to Latvia or further west. But what is the overall sense that you get from people? I mean, for most people, does it feel like that this is a temporary measure of, you know, leaving, like you might have to do in a hurricane or some kind of natural disaster? Or, you know, are there some people who feel that this might be something similar to, you know, what many Latvians went through in 1940, where, you know, nobody knows when they might be able to go back to a safe homeland? I mean, what's the general mood among people? I mean, you know, and also we've heard all kinds of estimates as to how long this could go on. You know, President Biden from the United States was saying to Congress that this could, you know, be a decades-long war. I mean, what's the sense among people?
Well, for one, I think that those people who managed to get into here just across the border, those people, I think, you know, there's this, when a huge trauma happens, there's this kind of levels of rage, fear, and anger, and finally comes acceptance. I think those people who managed to get into Poland, they've hit the acceptance part. Haven't seen any panic. haven't seen anything like that. And I spoke with them, I interviewed them for Trebenet, and a woman told me that she just hopes that she'll see her husband one day, and she has relatives here, but she said that, well, she's planning to be in Poland, at least with her relatives and people who go abroad. They, the common response is that, they gave us 3 years, and we really hope that about that time is when we can go back home.
Oh, God.
And everyone's biggest worry is they don't expect to return in a week or so. No one does that. Haven't seen anyone. Everyone is expecting to be away for at least a year. That's the sad reality. Another thing that people who are worried, who have arrived across the border and everything, who've had some time to think over this and mull over the situation, they also are worried about what their building is going to be. Because there are various theories about how this is going to end. And, one of them is the fact that maybe Putin takes part of Ukraine and then, the resistance kind of manages to dig in and the western parts of Ukraine remain the so-called free Ukraine. We're going to see some east-west Germany scenario because no one really believes that if Putin just turns in Yanukovych or some other leader loyal to Putin, that Ukrainian people are just not going to stand for it. There's going to be a massive police state there, brutal police state. Maybe something like we're about to see in Russia, because over there media is being closed, and I've heard a lot of people saying to me about martial law and everything. I'm getting a lot of messages here right now from my Russian listeners, both ethnic Russians and not, who are just shocked, and they're more and more afraid about being in that country as well. So, yeah.
So how long are you planning on being kind of back and forth between Ukraine and Poland?
Well, currently my plane back to Latvia is on the 9th of March. Mm-hmm. I hope I'll get back there. I had a vacation planned. I hope I'll still go. I'm still going to do reporting after that. But yeah, it's not easy. It's not easy. I hope I'll be back at 9th. So far, my hotel is paid up until 7th. We'll see. We'll see how it goes and how the border stuff goes and where I'll be. I just follow the events currently, and at least I have some security that I have a plane ticket from Warsaw back to Riga on the 9th, so try to be there. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do my work. I mean, told you, like last time you interviewed me here, I told you about how I'm trying to be a good journalist, and this is where I am now. This is what I feel like I should be, and thank you to you as well for informing Latvian people, because I haven't had much time to do that and to focus on Latvia currently because of all the turmoil and everything. But yeah, we just have to do our best and pull through and pray that this passes over in a better way than, maybe for once the worst case scenario could not happen, because for the past year we've seen only the worst things happening, and well, this surely has to end at some point, I hope.
Yeah, I certainly hope so too. Well, obviously, the number one question which everyone in the world has been asking is what they can do to help. And, there's been a lot of different measures that have been made. Obviously, different countries are providing military and humanitarian aid. There's been a lot of talk about, the International Legion, people volunteering as well. But what I've been hearing the most is that one of the best ways to help is to provide financial support, because I know a lot of people want to send goods. A lot of people are skeptical of charity organizations, in terms of how much of the money goes to overhead compared to actual goods that and services that help people. But do you have any Christoph's, based on your experience actually in Ukraine and in the community of those helping the refugees, do you have any specific recommendations for how people might be able to help in an effective way?
Yes. SOS Ukraine is a good charity, and I've been posting links, but if you don't want to go through charities and you don't want to spend money on administration, well, then of course I have Gonzo Solutions for Weird Problems, because a lot of my friends are kind of like that. One thing that's very effective for people to help directly to the people in Ukraine is just go to Airbnb, find a spot in some Ukrainian city, Kiev or whatever, and just basically book your stay for there for how many, just contact the owner and book your stay there for no matter how long. that if you want to directly help, because those people in Airbnbs, they're now sheltering people who've lost their homes, specifically in more rural areas. Just check if your Airbnb is somewhere in Kiev, most likely, or places where, you know, which hasn't been captured by Russians. Book a stay there, contact the owner, tell them that you're not coming, it's just a way out to help. And through Airbnb, that can be a facilitation of pure direct help to Ukrainians. Because those people right now are doing everything to help their communities. But I heard this, and this was an interesting take, because some people actually kind of, they want to remain anonymous. And this was a method for how a lot of Russians in Russia wanted to help, because it's illegal in Russia to now send money abroad to foreign accounts. But you can still pay for places like Airbnb and stuff like that. So if you want to remain more or less anonymous, you can do that as well. And of course, Sos Ukraine is good, and Latvia Zido.lv is good. They're all working hard, and what I've seen here, it's really, really, really effective. And I highly recommend that one. I don't remember his name, but you can look it up. There's this charity from Latvia, which is gathering and providing cars for that territorial defense organization. I highly recommend them, because they need it the most to defend Ukraine. But in general, just SOS Ukraine is the reliable charity, which is not a scam, and Zido.lv is also not a scam. But if you want to do it directly, then yeah, I would recommend that Airbnb route. And just a bit crazy. By the way, from all the stuff that people are giving in on the ground, people in Ukraine need everything. People here in the refugee camps, they mostly need hygiene products. Babies, like babies' formulas, female hygiene products, wet wipes, because the biggest issue is the food is provided by the locals here. That's okay. And clothing. But most of this stuff also goes not only to refugees, it goes straight into Ukraine. So all that stuff is useful. However, if you want to help specifically refugees, then it's all these products, because taking the shower is really hard with all this mess. Changing diapers, all that stuff, medical supplies. That's what needed the most. That's the greatest deficit. Definitely, if you can provide help in this way.
Wow. Well, thank you so much, Kristaps. I know that you're extremely busy and, obviously very, very under a lot of pressure, and I really appreciate taking the time to talk with me and our listeners. Is there anything else you'd like to say before we finish up?
Well, just remember my slogan for my podcast, happiness is mandatory. And I always talk about how that doesn't mean that you should be happy because the outside world tells you to. It's a form of resistance where you keep calm and stay happy even if the world around you is crumbling. That's the part. That's the endurance part. And I think we all need that right now. But thank you for having me on, Joe. And hey, you stay safe. And when I'll get back, I'll definitely come and visit you again.
Yeah, no, please do. It's always a pleasure, and hopefully, we'll be able to have you on the show again to talk about your future experiences. But hang in there, and thanks for doing what you're doing. I mean, because a lot of people do get their information about this region of the world through you, and you're doing a great job, rushing down and joining the journalists who are risking their lives, certainly. So. Anyway, thank all of you for listening as well. So, Kristaps already made a bunch of really great recommendations for how you can help, but you can also follow him more directly on his Eastern Border Facebook page, and you can also find the Eastern Border podcast on any podcast app that you use. I mean, he's been churning out episodes pretty much daily at this point since the war has began, definitely go and support him as well. But until Otto and I are back to talk about the news, then Vysa Labu VCM.